Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, and welcome to another Wednesday night edition of BAMS Radio. I am Thomas Watts, and Carrie Clark is with me. Carrie, how you doing this evening?
Pretty good, Thomas. And yourself?
I'm pretty good. For fans that don't know, Bama Bird had a little bit of surgery last week, so he will not be with us. The good news is, from everything that his wife has been posting on Facebook, it sounds like the surgery and the recovery have been going very well. Blip is actually down in Houston helping Bird out, making sure he can do everything. So neither of them will be joining us this week. They're probably, I say probably because I don't know, they probably will be back next week. But even with the successful surgery, Bird could still use some prayers. It was a pretty it was a pretty intensive thing. So, you know, if you're sitting, if you having a conversation with your good friend God, throw up a quick prayer for the Bird man. Speaking of someone that might need some prayers, former Bama athlete, for fans that haven't seen today, Rolando McClain retired from the NFL. I have to say that's shocking. It's unfortunate because it really shows a spiral that is not very healthy for the young man. But I kind of want your opinion on this one, Carrie. What do you think about this whole deal? Like I said, I was pretty shocked.
Well, the young man apparently has issues. I mean, first of all, we all have issues. But it seems to me like this kid has more issues than People magazine. And I'm really not trying to be funny, but it's like he just can't get his act together. Gosh, if you're the Oakland Raiders, do you ever draft a high school Alabama player again between Jamarcus Russell and LaRon McClain? How much money do they throw away on those two kids? But he was apparently set to get a fresh start under general manager Ozzie Newsome and the Baltimore Ravens. He then proceeded to come home to Decatur and get into a shouting match at a city park with a police officer when he was already on probation, which was dramatically ridiculous. And now at age 23, he has informed Ozzie Newsome that he plans to retire, and the Ravens have put him on the retired and inactive player list for their team, so he never even took a snap with them. And you know, you can go back to when he was at Alabama and got into an altercation in a dorm parking lot with some fraternity boys. You can look at the times he had run-ins with Nick Saban over other things. You can look at the fact that every time he goes home to Decatur, he gets into some kind of problem. Just a confused young man. I don't really understand it. I wish he would reconsider it. It was sort of not the thing I expected to see come across my Twitter feed today. It's just a very unfortunate situation. I wish the young man well, and I wish he'd reconsider, because you don't retire from the NFL at 23, I don't care who you are, unless you're hurt. And he's not hurt, at least not physically. He certainly has some anger management issues, there's no doubt about that. But he's a wonderful football player when he puts his mind to it. Just a really strange situation. I don't really know how to exactly put a finger on it, Thomas.
Well, I think that's the general consensus, is confusion. If you look at his stats with the Raiders, if you remove all the off-the-field stuff, he was putting up good numbers. So it's not like he was a subpar player. Was he a top 10 player? I think that's a little bit of a stretch. But it's not like he was bad. Just a quick note for fans, since it's just Carrie and I, we're only going till about 9 this evening, so about an hour. So you all are absolutely welcome to join us at any point. If you want to say I'm crazy for my Rolando McClain stance, just give us a call at 714-510-3707. We'd be glad to hear from you. We're going to be a little bit looser this evening because this is kind of a slapdash would be the word. Excuse me. Let's go back, Kerry, real quick. This kind of got my blood up a couple weeks ago because we missed last Wednesday. This one really got me with the College Football Hall of Fame and Derek Thomas's continued absence from that institution. Derek Thomas, Alabama linebacker, posted 26 or 27 sacks in a year, which is just absolutely off the wall. And not only was he a terror in college, he continued to be a terror in the NFL. I understand that NFL play shouldn't really affect the College Football Hall of Fame, but you're talking about the guy that was the extreme pass rusher that just blew up backfields before you had pass rushers that just blew up backfields at every play. And I have to question it. I have to question the integrity of the institution. And I'm not the only one that's doing it. There are a lot of people, there are a lot of what's going on national media members being asking what's the matter here. But Kerry, you had mentioned this to me in a conversation a week ago. I kind of wanted to talk about this a little more. What's your thought on this? I know I'm very incredulous. So what do you think here?
Well, part incredulous and part just ticked off. I think it's ridiculous to continue to ignore a guy like Derek Thomas, who was one of the top sack masters in the history of college football. I can recall Thomas driving over from my then home in Atlanta for a game at Legion Field on a beautiful Saturday afternoon against Penn State University, and number 55, Derek Thomas, getting, like, I kid you not, like 12 sacks that day. I've never seen anything like it. It was at least 12 tackles for a loss. They may not all have been sacks, but most of them were sacks. The Penn State quarterbacks knew who he was, and they couldn't get away from him. And it was the most dominating defensive individual performance that I've seen in person. And I've been watching college football in person since around 1977. And this was about 10 years after I started watching it, or maybe it was 88, 11 years. But never seen a performance like that. But that was not atypical of Derek. He was putting the pressure on quarterbacks the entire 4 years he played at Alabama. It's unfortunate that they didn't keep the quarterback hurry stat in those days, because he had a ton of those too. But he had a ton of sacks at Alabama. And you're right, you don't count the NFL stuff when you pick a guy in the College Football Hall of Fame. But certainly there's not a single person drawing breath right now who is eligible for the Hall of Fame and not in it that deserves it more than the late Derek Thomas. I mean, this guy was unbelievable in college. I don't know what the politics are that are keeping him out. I saw more media people calling the selectors to account this year than I've ever seen before, and maybe that'll do some good next year. But gosh, he should have been in for like 4 or 5 years now. I don't know why they keep ignoring him. I don't know the politics behind it. Somebody apparently has an agenda. I don't know what it is. But it's very unfortunate, and to answer your question, I'm 50% incredulous and 50% just pissed off, because I think it's ridiculous, crazy, unfair, stupid, moronic, whatever word you want to use. I cannot defend it. It just absolutely sucks.
Well, I think that puts it up. When I read the College Football Hall of Fame and the lack of Derek Thomas, I just was like, this is ridiculous. I've lost all faith in this organization for now. Just something that came across my Twitter feed. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but Eliza Shaw, a big defensive line player out of Georgia, I believe, has named Alabama and Georgia as his top two right now, big 2014 recruit. Speaking of recruiting, over the past few weeks of this program, Alabama basketball has been a lot of negative. Let's call a spade a spade. There's been a lot of negative surrounding Bama basketball predominantly. But there's been some good news on the recruiting front or on the transfer front. Kerry, could you talk to us about that a little bit? Give us an update. I'm not as familiar with basketball, I admit. You caught me.
Some good news and some bad. We'll start with the bad. Overnight last night, early this morning, Malik Smith, a shooting guard who could have stepped in for Trevor Lacy and helped Alabama not miss a beat, and who we thought Alabama was leading for, selected Minnesota as the school he's going to transfer to from Florida International. Malik is going to be immediately eligible to play for the Gophers because Florida International went on probation. And so the NCAA does allow those people who are transferred out of those institutions to not have to sit out a year. So Alabama, most of us that follow Alabama recruiting thought they had Malik Smith locked up. He will have 1 year to play one, and he will play that in the frozen tundra of Minnesota and not the beautiful city of Tuscaloosa. That was a setback. However, there has been some good news. Ricky Tarrant, we've already announced on here, transferred from Tulane. And then a player named Kessens, who is originally from Sweden, not Sweden, I'm sorry, Switzerland. Carl Engstrom is from Sweden. But Kessens is 6'9", 215-pound forward, whose game would be compared favorably to Jermichael Green. He is transferring in and is appealing to not have to sit out, but I don't think he's going to win that appeal. I think he will have to sit out. But that's a quality big man that's transferred from Longview University in Texas, which is a one-bid league they play in. But when he played against the University of Arkansas, an SEC team, Kessens had 17 points and 12 rebounds. That's just a flash of what he could do against top-flight competition. So Kessens, I believe it's Michael Kessens, will be joining the Alabama team in practice this year, like Ricky Tarrant will, and then in games next year. And so that's two out of three good news. And then I guess you could go three out of four when Bill Battle was asked Tuesday night at a Crimson Caravan stop in Andalusia, Alabama, about the state of the men's basketball program. And Bill Battle's response to the media was without blinking, each time I meet with Anthony Grant, I'm more impressed with him. He is the right guy for the job. He is our coach. So that doesn't really sound like a guy who's on the hot seat. So that's three out of four pieces of news about the program that I felt were optimistic. Certainly Malik Smith could have come in and started where Lacey's transfer left an opening, but that job will have to be filled by someone else now, possibly late period signee, a junior college All-American, Algie Key, who is a good player too, obviously, because he has great credentials. So that's kind of what's going on right now with men's basketball. The coaches are actively working to put together a good 3-4-man signing class for this November. They would like to include at least three of the following 4 or 5 kids in that class. One would be Devin Mitchell, an outstanding shooting guard from north of Atlanta, who's being recruited by lots of big names but likes Alabama. You have in-state player Riley Norris of Albertville, who is tearing it up in the summer AAU circuit, getting rave reviews every stop he makes, and Riley is considering Alabama among other out-of-state schools. You have a gentleman named William Lee from the Selma area, Dallas County High School, a 6'8 guy who averages double-digit blocked shots in high school. And you have Justin Coleman, the top point guard in the state of Alabama, who is an Alabama lean and who was being recruited very hard by Alabama, Arkansas, and others. Arkansas recently took a point guard commitment, which greatly helped Alabama's chances. So there are some good things to talk about regarding men's basketball. And then, Thomas, Coach Battle made his first hire of the year in women's basketball, and I, for one, was a little surprised about that. How about you?
I've had my head in the sand. I've read somewhere that he wants the women's basketball firm to outgrow Foster Auditorium, and the new coach's name was in the article, and it's already flown out of my head. So if you could help me out.
Let me help you cure your rectal osmosis.
Thank you.
Her name is Christy Curry. She is coming to Tuscaloosa to be announced officially tomorrow. She is coming from Texas Tech University, where she helped the Lady Red Raiders to a number of NCAA tournament appearances. Her stop prior to Lubbock was Purdue University, where she took the Lady Boilermakers not only to the tournament, but 1 year all the way to the championship game before they lost. So this is a quality head women's basketball coach in Christy Curry. She's a veteran. She's in her mid-40s, mid to late 40s. She knows the deal. She knows how to recruit. She knows how to build a program. She knows how to hire staff. And she's a proven, very proven coach, not the kind of person I thought that Coach Battle would go out and get. I thought it would be either Shelton State coach Madonna Thompson, who I understand was the runner-up, or even perhaps Georgia associate head coach Joni Crenshaw, who's a former person of the same title of Alabama that played at Alabama as a great recruiter. But Joni, my understanding is, didn't even interview. He interviewed three or four ladies, and I think it got down to Christy and Madonna. And if Christy had turned Coach Battle down, understand Madonna Thompson would have gotten the job and would have done a good job. But Christy Curry is a big-time home run hire for Bill Battle. He has shown with this hire, Thomas, that he is serious, as Mal Moore was, that he is serious about Alabama being a contender in the Southeastern Conference and the nation in every sport. And, yes, he does want to get Foster Auditorium filled for games. And I don't know Christy Curry personally, but I think if you were to ask her, she would probably tell you that she'd like to get it in 3 or 4 years to where they don't even play in Foster anymore, where they move back over to Coleman. I think that would be a huge thing for their recruiting. I understand they have lost a few recruits because of the size of Foster Auditorium. I completely understand that. It's not your typical SEC basketball arena. It's a nice little quaint place with a good, you know, crowd situation as far as crowd being right up on the action, but it's not a good recruiting tool. And perhaps Christy Curry can get Alabama women's basketball back to a point where they aren't playing in a 3,000 to 4,000 seat place, that they're moving back into the 15,000 seat Coliseum. They can certainly still use Foster for things like volleyball if they'd like, but I think it would be the basketball's advantage to outgrow it. But the bottom line, though, to sum it all up, an outstanding home run, big time hire by Bill Battle for University of Alabama women's basketball. And really, it warmed my heart to see him go out and get a coach of that caliber. I honestly didn't think that somebody with her credentials would consider Alabama, but apparently Coach Battle hasn't forgotten how to sell, which he learned in the business world. And apparently he's still pretty good at it, even at age 70. So, you know, roll Bill Battle on that hire. That was awesome.
Absolutely. I appreciate the knowledge. I did not realize that the hire was that, I guess, highly rated. And that's excellent. That's really all I've got to say. I hate to keep bouncing around, but we got a few things to get through. Again, if you want to join us, the number 714-510-3707. Let's talk Diamond real quick. So SEC tournament, well, not the NCAA tournament has been seeded for softball, and Alabama is the number 10 seed. Because of Alabama's relatively low seeding, there's a decent chance that if Alabama advances to the Super Regional round, the Tide will not be hosting, which is a very different set of circumstances for our ladies. Alabama has been so near the top for multiple years that they've almost always hosted a Super Regional. But, you know, Carrie, again, I'm going to put you on the spot with this. Softball, what happened? That is, in terms of overall, that is a little half step back from what fans and I believe players are used to from postseason Alabama softball teams.
And I do have plenty to say on that topic. Let me get out one quick basketball fact that just came across Twitter. Transfer center Musa Gay from Alabama has signed with Valparaiso and will be eligible to play next year. Trevor Lacey has not selected where he will play. He won't be eligible wherever he signs, but Musa Gay will because he got his degree already. And Musa will be with Valpo next year. Very interesting choice. Now, answering the softball question, the premise of seeding in the softball NCAA tournament is supposed to be that you base it very largely on RPI. Now, to get to host a regional and a super regional, you must finish in the top eight, and then you must be seeded in the top eight. Well, in their wisdom, the committee for the NCAA softball tournament chose to seed Alabama 10th, even though when the final RPIs came out the next day, Alabama was 5th. And that is because of the difficult schedule the Crimson Tide played in the Southeastern Conference. Now, I don't know exactly what the logic was. I believe it had to do with going 2-6 in their final eight games, which is something the committee looks at. But the bottom line is a team with an RPI of 5 should have a seeding no worse than 8. And by seeding Alabama 10th, it meant that Alabama will be home this weekend, but may not be home next weekend unless somebody in Knoxville upsets Tennessee. Tennessee got, I believe, a 6 seed, which is probably about what Alabama should have gotten. They both should have been top eight, bottom line. But the committee didn't see it that way, and therefore, unless Tennessee is upset at home, then Alabama will have to travel to Knoxville if Alabama wins its own regional. Now, Thomas, Alabama has a fairly competitive regional. They have Alabama's first game will be at 6 o'clock Friday against the Jacksonville State Gamecocks, an interesting matchup because they won their way in on Sunday by winning their conference tournament. And their coach, Jana McGinnis, and her staff are very good friends with Patrick Murphy and his staff. That's the opening. That's the only matchup for Alabama. Before that, there will be a 3:30 game between South Carolina Upstate and Western Kentucky, and then the two winners will play at 1 o'clock on Saturday, and then the losers bracket will begin with a couple of games. But the Crimson Tide did not get a fair shake from the committee based on their RPI. I'm afraid the committee was looking at the 2-6 record to close out the year, which did suck. But, you know, you're supposed to look at body of work, too. And body of work has you as a 5 in the RPI. You should at least be no worse than an 8 in the seeding. But the committee put them a 10. By being a 10, they will not be at home for the Super Regional unless Tennessee is upset. And that is not something you can count on because Tennessee has the SEC Player of the Year in Lauren Gibson, an outfielder, and they also have two of the top pitchers, the Renfro sisters. They're a very solid club, and they're probably going to win their regional without much problem. Looking at who's all coming to Tuscaloosa, if Alabama plays the way Alabama is capable of playing, Alabama will win that regional, and hopefully we'll only need about 3 games to do it. You never know because all these teams were good enough to qualify for the postseason, so it's not like any of the 4 are just terrible teams, but none of them have the up-and-down lineup talent that Alabama has. That's something interesting. Something else interesting, former Alabama basketball player Keith Askins is an assistant coach on the Miami Heat, and they were down the entire game, and they have just taken the lead in the fourth quarter with 5.5 minutes to go in an effort to close out the Chicago Bulls. So we got a little NBA in there. But, yeah, the softball thing, it was unfortunate. The committee went more by how they finished the season than by their RPI. But it is what it is, and, you know, you can always hope for Tennessee to lose, but it's not very likely. Alabama's going to need to go ahead and take care of business this weekend, and then most likely 95% prepare to go to Knoxville next weekend, and they'll have to go through Tennessee in reality unless a huge upset happens in Knoxville. They'll have to go through Tennessee to get back to Oklahoma and defend their national championship. But that's kind of what's going on the diamond right now. Alabama went to the NCAA tournament last week and went 1-1. They had a great rally to beat Texas A&M on the first night, and then the second night they were just beaten by Florida, the regular season and tournament champion. And I think Florida got a number 2 national seed, 2 or 3. But it wasn't a horrible performance in Lexington, the site of the SEC tournament for Alabama, but it wasn't a great one either. It was 1-1 and go home. So the tournament was single elimination this year. Years past, it used to be double, and then they got all these extra teams, and they couldn't do that anymore. So that's what's going on the women's side of the diamond, Thomas.
Well, astute as always. And, you know, we can go back to talk baseball, but you did touch on a topic that has gotten a lot of play, and I want to go football for a little while here. And
sure.
You mentioned schedule. There's been, let's just say, the SEC has been getting a lot of pressure from, at least what I perceive as other conferences and members of the media, to go to a 9-game schedule in football. Nick Saban has said it's not a bad idea. I'm kind of ambivalent. I don't buy into the let's get rid of the permanent opponents idea because even though I admit I'm young, I know a lot of the history surrounding the Alabama-Tennessee matchup, the Tennessee rivalry, and to lose that just is not something I'm okay with, and it's not even something I can quantify. It's almost like a metaphysical thing. I've always grown up with Alabama playing Tennessee on the third Saturday in October, and it's, you know, you've seen great games, and the fan bases hate – if they didn't hate each other, they certainly hate each other now because Alabama is stomping a mud hole through Tennessee, and Philip Fulmer did the exact same thing to Alabama 10 years ago. So I'm not sure I'm okay with going to nine games if it means losing the permanent cross-division rivals. But at the other thing I have a problem with, let me go back. The other thing I have a problem with the nine-game schedule, I like the out-of-conference matchups that have pervaded in that ninth, that hard ninth game spot, you know, the Alabama playing Virginia Tech or Wisconsin or Michigan or whoever it's been. I kind of like the randomness of those matchups. And as a fan, I'm not sure I'm willing to give that up. If Alabama were to play 10, quote-unquote, hard games, I think it'd be okay. But at the same time, I wonder if that would negatively affect Alabama's chances, Alabama or any SEC team's chances to get back into the playoff. Because one thing you did hit on, Kerry, I want to draw from your softball conclusion is the committee seeded Alabama 10 in softball because they looked at what Alabama did recently going 2-7. They did not follow their mandate to look at entire body of work. Well, some genius over at the BCS decided to get rid of the computers and institute people that don't have to follow their mandate. And you can get these random reasonings. And a loss whenever could be death because, well, the color of Alabama's cleats is wrong or something similarly absurd. So I'm kind of ambivalent. I have reservations about the nine-game football schedule, but I can see positives, I can see negatives. If you can massage out some of my trouble, Kerry, please go ahead. Please, or if I'm just crazy, you can tell me that too. I've accepted my insanity.
Well, let me just tell you what Nick Saban said when he was asked about that very same thing at a Crimson Caravan last Fort Payne, Alabama. His theory, and I don't have a problem with it, is no problem going to nine games and still opening the season with a pretty good opponent. Just the rest of the league to buy in with that. And with patsies, if we're going to play conference, the Virginia Tech or West Virginia or Wisconsin or someone like that, we'll do it, Saban says. We'll do it and still play nine conference games, but we need the rest of the league to agree to some tough opening game matchups just like we have. Regarding the Tennessee question, I have not heard it said, and maybe I just haven't been listening, but I have not heard it said that going to nine games would automatically do away with that rivalry. I think the Southeastern Conference is smart enough to figure out a way to where Alabama could still keep Tennessee every year, but I don't know the mathematics behind that. The rivalry you have to keep is Auburn and Tennessee. That's the two. It seemed to me that they could still rotate things around and keep Tennessee. The goal of the nine game for Saban is he wants all his players to play at least one time against every Southeastern Conference team in their 4 years in Tuscaloosa. And that's all fine and good. The proposed super conference of 16 teams apiece comes around. They won't be able to do it then. But that being said, I'm not 100% sure that the nine game schedule would automatically do away with Tennessee. Well, I haven't put the pen and paper to it like maybe I should have. To me, there's probably a way around that. And, you know, it's funny, Thomas, where I thought you were going with that question when you first started on this topic was the responses of Bobby Butthurst and Charlie Frontbutt Weiss when they were recently asked about the SEC's top to bottom superiority, but maybe that was on your docket for the second half hour. I don't mean to steal your thunder there.
That's going to be the next thing. But I do want to say, I have seen for nine conference games a 6-2-1 model where you have the six interdivision games, two rotating games, and then your permanent opponent. You know, Alabama.
Okay, the one
Tennessee.
Would be Tennessee then.
Correct. I have seen that
because we don't have any lasting relationships with anybody else in the East.
Correct.
So I think the math would allow for that, Thomas.
Right, and that, again, I'm just listing personal reservations and stuff that I hope the powers that be consider just as a fan, as someone who likes watching certain games, and I admit I'm spoiled, but that's just my own personal thing. And if they go 6-1, I would be okay with that.
Right. No, and Tennessee would too.
Absolutely.
As much as they hate the beatings they've been taking the last 6 years, they would be okay with it because they understand tradition over there as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you did mention the Bob Stoops, Charlie Weiss brouhaha, and I do want to get into that, but why don't we take a quick break? It's about 8:30. We're about half done with our show. Just a reminder, if you want to join in with Carrie and I, the number is 714-510-3707. And if I can find a song to play, we will be right back. Of course, the music's gone.
I can sing if you like.
Let's hold off on that. Oh, here we go. All of my friends listening will love me for playing this. We'll be right back on BAMF Radio.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Jump to the left. With your hands on your hips.
No, not at all. In another dimension, with voyeuristic intention.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice. In fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.atlanticbeddingandfurniture.com.
www.atlanticbeddingandfurniture.com.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
And we're back on BAMS Radio. Again, you want to join us? I'm with Kerry Clark. Bird and Blip are handling some health trouble. Bird, if you missed the opening of the show, Bird had a little surgery, and Blip's just kind of helping him out, making sure everything's okay. The surgery was fine, but as I said, they open again. Just chuck up some prayers for Bird. It was a pretty big surgery, so you know, just keep him in your thoughts. Anyway. Again, and also, if you want to join us, number 714-510-3707. We'd love to hear from you. Before the break, we kind of hashed out the 9-game SEC schedule, and Kerry and I previewed where we're going next. And it's probably – this is truly silly football offseason. There's not a lot of news, so anything that any coach says, even slightly off kilter, is going to get blown way out of proportion. Well, for fans that have – missed it, Bob Stoops, head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners, attempted to make a case that from top to bottom, the Big 12 is a better conference than the SEC. Okay, so definitely Bob Stoops sticking his foot in his mouth. Then Charlie Weiss tries to back him up, saying just based on these numbers, he does have a point. Well, yes, Bob Stoops does have a point in that the bottom half of the Big 12 was better than the bottom half of the SEC last year. Therefore, what? The Big 12's a better conference? That's preposterous. I'll give fans the quickest way to destroy this argument about how basically the Big 12 is more even because teams beat up on each other. Oklahoma has a bigger proportion of championships in the Big 12 than any other team in that league. Oklahoma has won an absolute ton of them. There's a reason that Bob Stoops was once called Big Game Bob. He would go out and he would demolish teams in big games. So when you take Bob Stoops' argument in and of itself and expand it past a very limited data set, it blows up in his face. But, you know, that was my reaction again, was very incredulous, very, my God, do we not have anything else to talk about because this is insane? But, you know, Carrie, what do you think? Help me out here.
I think that Butthurt Bob and Front Butt Charlie are both just, what they were doing, Thomas, is they were responding to questions posed to them at booster events, okay? Now, they reiterated it later when the media cornered them because they didn't want to backtrack. But the things that you say at a booster club event are basically designed to get your boosters fired up, whether they're fact-based or not. The bottom half of the SEC did have some sucky teams, but so did the bottom half of the Big 12. What nobody seemed to want to bring up is the SEC versus Big 12 bowl records. They weren't even close. The SEC was much better. In head-to-head, the SEC is much better. If the only thing that you got to hang your hat on is the bottom half of your league versus the bottom half of the other league, you really don't have much of a leg to stand on. You really don't even have a prosthesis to stand on. You're reaching, you're grasping. And, Thomas, it's that time of year. It's that time of year when websites and newspapers and TV stations and radio stations are having to basically manufacture news. So if they get wind of a coach making a remark like that at a booster club and they get an opportunity to interview the coach, say at the next leg of the caravan or whatever, they're going to ask that question and get something for the record. And that's what happened in both these cases. I was making fun of them, you know, putting them nicknames and all that, but Bob Stoops and Charlie Weiss are both intelligent men. They know the deal. They know they don't want none of the SEC. They might play a regular season game sometime against a bottom feeder in the SEC if there are any left, and there'll probably be three left. But it was silly. It was a product of the time of year that we're in where there's not any football being played or practiced. Recruiting is going on, but there's not a ton of hard news coming out about recruiting. Well, at least not from an Alabama standpoint. I know Auburn got four recruits from Mobile in a span of a month, which is good for them. None of them had committable Alabama offers, but, hey, Auburn wants to trumpet it. That's fine. But getting back to what you asked about, it's just coaches responding to questions about things they had told media groups that leaked out to reporters and got the reporters the right they told booster groups, excuse me. Coaches told these things to booster clubs, and it got leaked out to reporters, and the reporters decided, hey, I'll ask them and get them on the record about it if they really believe that, and they did, and they stood by their guns. And it's just basically it's manufacturing sports news at a slow time of year. Really all that I could see about it. And I'm sure that you'd like to give your opinion on that, Thomas, and I want you to. But before you do, let me give a shout-out to another, our newest sponsor here on BAMS Radio, and that's Big Heads Barbecue. You can look them up at www.bigheadsbbq.net. Our good friend Chuck Peek, a frequent visitor to the BAMS Radio tent, located just across the street from the Quad in Tuscaloosa on game day and A-Day. Chuck Peek knows how to cook some barbecue, and if you live anywhere around South Alabama and you want somebody to cater your next church event, school event, booster club event, civic club, whatever you want to get catered, You need to give Chuck a call. You can call him at 251-379-0094. You can email him, bigheadchuck@gmail.com. And, again, you can go download the catering menu at www.bigheadsbbq.net. Highly recommend it. Look at the comments on the first page of the website. They talk about the triple threat that I talked about a couple weeks ago, which is a piece of pork with a small piece of bacon in the middle. A small piece of sausage in the middle wrapped with a piece of bacon and then doused in Chuck's homemade barbecue sauce. So shout out to Big Head Chuck and Chuck's Big Head's Barbecue, a great sponsor for us. Again, you can call them 251-379-0094. And look at the website, www.bigheadsbbq.net. So, got that out of the way. But anyway, and they're the real deal there. It's really some outstanding food. I highly recommend it. And I just wanted to get that in before we got to a different topic.
Absolutely. I'll follow you up with another shout-out real quick to our other sponsor that's not actually going to get a drop because I don't think we're going to take another break before we end the show. I want to mention our good friend Billy over at Sunbelt Inflatable Tents. The tent that Carrie just mentioned, the BAM's tent, that's one of Billy's inflatable tents. Check him out at sunbeltinflatabletents.com, all one word. It's really interesting because BAM's chat, we have a little chat room on the website for just people to chat with throughout the week. And occasionally Billy will pop in and link his newest tent that he's put out. And it's always interesting to see where he's sending these things. It's kind of an interesting who's who of, you know, what major college program has seen this tent and gotten one of them. He's got a very, very, very good Florida State tent, but he's gotten other stuff too. So definitely check him out as well. Anyway, back to the content.
You know what, Thomas? They were down by about 16 points going into the fourth quarter. But the Miami Heat have rallied for a 94-91 win over Chicago to advance to the NBA Eastern Finals. So shout out to a former Alabama player and Heat assistant coach Keith Askins, who looks like he's on his way to another ring. So there is a Bama slant to that. I wasn't just doing that to be random.
That's fine. I have to say, we'll jump on NBA for just a second. There's not going to be anybody that can really stop the Heat. I think the West is kind of a mess. I mean, that sounds horrible, but unless it's San Antonio, I don't see anybody challenging the Heat in the finals. And the Pacers, I mean, the Pacers play defense, congratulations, but the Heat are so talented. You don't win 27 games in a row and not have an ultra-talented team. But anyway, this is not an NBA
show. You know
what?
The only team that could have stopped them, the only team that could have possibly stopped them, lost their point guard, and I'm talking about Oklahoma City. Had they been able to keep Byron Westbrook healthy, then you may have a different story, but I don't even think they're going to get past Memphis. And that's a great story, the Memphis Grizzlies. Alabama fans live in Memphis. I know, for example, Thomas Barrett Jones is a huge Grizzly fan. Devin Grissom, who was on the TV show Sweet Home Alabama, a recent Alabama graduate, huge Grizzly fan. That's a great story, too. But, you know, had Oklahoma City been able to keep Westbrook healthy, I think they might have had a shot against the Heat. As it is, I don't even think they'll be in the Western Finals. That's probably all we need to say about the NBA. But, it's, you know, hey, it is a sports show, and it does deserve a little bit of mention.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. Without Westbrook, the Thunder are sunk, and I don't know if anyone can keep up with Heat. But anyway, yes, this is much more focused on Alabama, and I'm sure some listeners are wanting to jump through their computers and smack me with a baseball bat.
You know what? Speaking of which.
Good segue.
very, very good segue, Thomas. The Alabama baseball team has got the horrendously difficult task of going to Nashville, Tennessee, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of this week to take on the number one in the nation ranked and regular season Southeastern Conference champion Vanderbilt Commodores. They have a pitching staff that would probably be the rotation for a lot of AAA teams. I kid you not. Certainly AA teams in pro baseball. They are darned good. Alabama will be very fortunate if it can get one out of three in Nashville. Alabama needed to sweep Missouri this past weekend for our RPI and NCAA reasons. They did not pull off a sweep, but they did avoid losing the series with a very nice ninth-inning rally. They trailed 6-4 going to the bottom of the ninth, and they rallied to win 7-6 on a walk-off hit by first baseman Austin Smith for the winning RBI. And Alabama is currently 13-13 in the SEC, and it's a very strong chance they'll finish 13-16. They have qualified for the SEC tournament, which will be played at the Hoover Met, not very far from where I reside. And I do plan to cover some of that. And Alabama will probably need – well, if Alabama gets swept this weekend in Nashville, it'll help their strength of schedule, but it won't help their RPI. They'll probably need to win at least one or two in Hoover. There have been some projections by a couple of people whose opinions I deeply respect, one of which is Mark Etheridge of SEBaseball.com. Probably need to get Mark on this show at some point. Very knowledgeable guy about college baseball. And Mark projects Alabama to get a 2 seed right now before going to Nashville and maybe getting swept. As of today, he projects them as a 2 seed. Now, where they'll end up is anybody's guess. I've seen some guesses that said Tallahassee. I've seen one that said Los Angeles. Los Angeles is basically is right now just a very brief rabbit chase. Los Angeles is hosting the NCAA Women's Tennis Championships, and Alabama is out there for that for, I believe, the first time in program history. But getting back to the baseball topic, right now most people project them as a 2 or 3 seed, but that means they're making the tournament, which is progress because they certainly didn't make it last year with a losing record. They do have a winning overall record right now, but their SEC league record, 13-13, it's going to be a daunting task to go to Nashville and even win 1 out of 3. If they get 1 out of 3, that would probably lock them into the NCAA tournament. If they get swept, they probably need to win at least one in Hoover. I don't know how the matchups are going to shake out. If the season ended today, they would actually open up in Hoover against Auburn, which would be very good for the turnstiles at the Hoover Met. That could change based on what happens this weekend. But the reason that they're playing Thursday, Friday, and Saturday is that the conference agreed a few years ago to move the closing regular season series up a day for everybody so they could set their pitching for the tournament. And 10 of the 14 teams qualify, and Auburn and Alabama have both already clinched spots in Hoover. But to move and normally if you make Hoover, you make the NCAA tournament, but it's not a lock. So Alabama probably has a little bit of work left to do, but right now they're on pace to get a bid as a traveling team, as a road team, in somebody else's regional, and that is a vast improvement over where they were this time a year ago. So I do want to give a shout-out to them on that. And then also a shout-out to my friend Aaron Suttles, who had a detailed story on PodSports.com and the Tuscaloosa News printed newspaper about some renovation plans for Sewell-Thomas Stadium. Thomas, you've heard me on my soapbox about that on this show many times. I've always felt they need to rebuild a new stadium either on the Black Warrior River or over near the current softball complex, but the plans are not to do that. According to Aaron's sources, the plans are to move home plate up 20 or 30 feet to where it improves the sight lines and to build skyboxes and to try to renovate and try to put lipstick on the pig that is currently Sewell-Thomas Stadium. I'm going to have to take a wait-and-see attitude on that. I'm not thrilled with them not changing locations. But, hey, if they got architects telling them they can do it and get the sight lines right, then I suppose I need to be on board with it. The sight lines, especially down the right field line, are horrible right now. Most fans, unless they're sitting right there in right field, cannot tell if a ball is fair or foul, whatever. But the plan, I'm told by Aaron Suttles, and I trust him because he has great sources, that is to move home plate up 20 or 30 feet and rebuild everything and go from there, which that's kind of where we are in Crimson Tide baseball. The good news is it does look like that they're going to make the NCAA tournament unless they absolutely crash and get swept in Nashville and then lose 2 straight in Hoover, which that tournament is still double elimination, which is probably good for Alabama. But Alabama's pitching has been good from a starting point of view, but here these last 2 or 3 weeks, the bullpen has had difficulty throwing strikes, or they would have swept Missouri this past weekend. That being said, Shout out to Coach Mitch Gaspard and his guys, because it does look like they're going to be in the postseason this year, and that is certainly a vast improvement over the 2012 season.
Well, absolutely. Last year, Blip was dogging the baseball team throughout the silly football offseason because of how poor they played. So it's any step in the right direction in any Alabama sport is something I think you should support, quite frankly. We have about 10 minutes left. I'll give the number one more time to join us. The number is 714-510-3707. Got a question for me, got a question for Carrie. Come on with us. We'll get you on. We'll go about. You mentioned something a little while ago, Carrie, and I guess we can end on this topic, and it's football recruiting. Alabama got a recent commitment in Zach Whitley. I think I pronounced his name correctly.
Whitley,
excuse me. Thank you, sir. And as you mentioned a little while ago, Auburn's been making a lot of noise down here with recruits. St. Paul's, which I live literally like two blocks away from, inside linebacker Trey Williams just committed to Auburn. Justin Thornton from down in Vigor and Pritchard committed to Auburn and picked up a couple more. Could you just give us a quick rundown on where Alabama stands with recruiting in terms of, you know, not only Mr. Whitley, but why, you know, is Alabama in trouble? I'm not saying Alabama is in recruiting trouble losing these kids to Auburn, but, you know, is it paradigm shifting? Is this Damian Craig playing dividends, or is it that Alabama had bigger fish to fry?
It's Alabama having bigger fish to fry for the most part. I think if he'd been patient, that Trey Williams would have eventually had a committable Alabama offer. When he committed to Auburn, he did not. He was told that they were looking at other linebackers. Someone that knows more about the goings-on in the Alabama recruiting green room, whatever you want to call it, the hot board, says that Whitley was the number one linebacker on our board and that Williams was like number four. Not to say he wouldn't have gotten an offer, because had he been patient, he may have gotten one by August or September. And by offer, I mean committable offer. There are written offers, which are committable, and there are verbal offers, which are not committable. And by committable, I mean you call a press conference, put hats on the table, and announce you're going somewhere. It's not a good idea to do that with a school that you don't have a written offer from. And Trey Williams did not yet have a written offer from Alabama, but probably is going to get one. This is one situation of the four Mobile commitments. Alabama will continue to pursue Joshua Kasher as well, who's a very good center. Auburn has gotten an early commitment from. If he has a good senior year, Alabama will put the pressure on him to flip. But I think of the four, that Justin Thornton did not even have an offer at all from Alabama. And then Deshaun Davis, the linebacker of Vigor, didn't either. That was just cases where Auburn saw a chance to get back in on the Vigor pipeline, because that school puts out college football players every year to their credit. And even though their former head coach, Kerry Stevenson, is now an off-the-field assistant at Alabama, those two incredible offers. St. Paul's kid, Trey Williams, what I was trying to say earlier and I never got it out of my mouth, if there's going to be a Cyrus Carno, Brent Callaway, T.J. Yeldon type of flip this year, and I'm not saying there is, but if there's going to be a flip like that after January from Auburn to Alabama this year, which it seems like an annual occurrence, Thomas, Trey Williams is the guy to watch. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it happened if Alabama turns the heat up, because any linebacker in their right mind would want to play for Kirby Smart and Nick Saban. He's right mind. He just didn't have a publicly committable offer at the time he committed to Auburn. No matter what anybody at Auburn or Mobile or St. Paul says, he didn't have one. So I think he will have one by August or September, and I think Alabama will continue to recruit him and try to get Trey Williams to flip. Those other three kids, well, Kasher, Alabama may flip him, but I understand that his relationship with Damian Craig is very strong and that he's less likely to flip. The other two kids, Thornton and Davis, they're not going to ever get committable Alabama offers. They weren't considered fits for Alabama's defense books for when they evaluate players. And, you know, that's not a knock on those kids, because some kids are better suited for a 4-3 defense than they are a 3-4 like Nick Saban's. A defensive end in a 4-3 is built differently than a defensive end in a 3-4. And a prime example would be Jamichael Winston, who's probably going to have a pretty good career from Vigor at Arkansas. But he was deemed not a fit for the Alabama defense. I would like to have seen him take him and try to beat him. Maybe he'll have a great career at Arkansas. I actually think he will. I was very impressed with Jamichael Winston when he was chasing down just 20 years ago, a game that Hakeem and myself covered over at Hueytown. But so that's kind of where we are. Auburn has not by any means retaken Mobile like they like to trumpet that they have. But, yes, Damian Craig is a wonderful recruiter. He is. He's probably the best guy they've recruited in Mobile since Joe Witt did it for Pat Dye and Terry. Yeah, Damian's a great recruiter. He's from that area, you know, and I believe he played at Blount, but a great, great player from that area, great recruiter, great coach, good guy, whatever, Roll Tide, Damian, whatever. Damian Craig is one of the few guys the current Auburn staff that I think if you were to dig, you would find his name in Nick Saban's Rolodex. I don't know if he'll ever come to work for Nick Saban, but I think he's one of the few that Nick would like want to interview. So, no, Alabama hasn't lost its toehold on Mobile, and there is a chance that Trey Williams could flip to Alabama. I'm not saying he will, but I'm saying there's a chance that he could flip by National Signing Day. Three, probably not. Although they'll probably continue to recruit Joshua Kasher. The other two, they won't even get phone calls from Alabama because, quite frankly, they never have. So I hate to rain on the parade of the Auburn Retook Mobile fan club, but facts are facts, and that's what I'm about.
I'm kind of just a mouthpiece here. That's what I'm hearing because I work down here. And some of my buddies who are Auburn fans have been crowing, and I'm just like, I would let's pump the brakes on this one here, guys. Obviously, they don't listen to me, which is to their detriment. Anyway,
I've had to eat plenty of crow in my time. I can tell you that it tastes good with Dreamland or Big Head barbecue sauce on it.
There you go. I wanted to hit a quick point that you made, and then we can go ahead and be spinning down for the night. Committable offers, how you accrue them. Like, when would they come? To just clarify to fans, the evaluation process goes on. It really ratchets up at summer camps where Alabama can see the kid at their facility. Alabama will have multiple camps throughout the summer where athletes throughout the Southeast will get an invite to. As well, if Alabama gets film on a kid from one of the several hundred camps, you know, the opening out in Oregon for Nike or a rivals camp or whatever, the evaluation process continuously goes on. And offers get given out not at random, but it's a constant thing. So when Kerry says he didn't have a committable offer, but he can earn one, the staff just hasn't evaluated, either needs to tweak their evaluation where they're comfortable, or they want to see more, or they're waiting on someone else. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just recruiting. It's a 24/7 business where everybody is information hungry and everybody's trying to get the same guys. And again, it's not a bad thing. So don't go. I'm not trying to push anyone off a cliff with that. But anyway, I just wanted to let fans know, don't worry, this happens. It's very common, no big deal. That being said, Kerry, it's around 9 o'clock, so I'm ready to spin down unless you have another thing you'd like to talk about this evening.
Two very quick points. Number one, I'm looking forward to I missed the Crimson Caravan down the road for being Hoover, so I'm looking forward as I've actually able to procure a ticket to the one in Atlanta, and I will be hearing Nick Saban speak for about the 101st time, but it'll be the first time I've heard Bill Battle speak tomorrow night at the 755 Club at Turner Field in Atlanta. Looking forward to that. Number two, just a quick message from those of us who are actually real Baptists to the idiots from Westboro calling themselves Baptists. Stay the hell out of Tuscaloosa and leave us alone. We don't want you anywhere near our campus. You're idiots. That's about all I've got for this week, Thomas.
Well, you know, let me echo that. That Westboro thing is completely ridiculous, and that's all I'm going to say because I'll just start getting angry.
They don't deserve any more than that. Let's close the show and give everybody a big roll tide, and you take it out, Thomas.
Absolutely. For Kerry Clark, I am Thomas Watts. Thank you so much for listening to BAMS Radio on this Wednesday evening. We will be back next week. Hopefully all four of us, Bird and Blip, as I've said, they're out of pocket. Bird had a surgery. Make sure to keep Bird in your thoughts. It's a pretty tough deal. But anyway, hopefully all four of us will be back, and we'll be rocking again. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of BAMS Radio.
Roll Tide, everybody.